Podcast, where we connect molecules to money. I'm your host, Shireen Lakhani, and for those of you who are new to the series, East Daily is an energy, research, and data powerhouse that links oil and gas fundamentals to midstream equity cash flows. We've been doing a monthly version of the Midstream Edge, or MEDGE, as we lovingly call it in-house, for a little over a year now, where we pull in analysts from our team to cover hot topics in the midstream and oil and gas space, but we're trying something different, so starting with this episode, you'll get to hear from us every week, short episodes accessible wherever you listen to podcasts, so you get more of us when you want it, where you want it. Not to mention more timely insights to keep you always up to date with the latest developments in oil and gas. Today, I have with me our analysts covering Western Midstream Partners, ticker symbol WES, or WES, Zach Van Everen and Ben Reber. What's happening, guys?
Not much. How are you today, Shireen?
Pretty good. Pretty good. It's a Friday. I'm happy.
Yeah.
So we've been hearing a lot about the saga between Occidental and Chevron to buy out Anadarko over the past few weeks. And it's been a big hullabaloo. But one thing that no one's really been talking about is what might happen to WES, which is a subsidiary of Anadarko. So I know you both have been putting a lot of thought into this, and you recently wrote a snapshot on it. So I'm hoping to get your perspective on exactly that today. But before we dive into the WES part of the equation, maybe one of you can kind of run us through the timeline of events leading up to today, kind of just catch our listeners up to what's been going on.
Yeah, I can lead us off, and Zach, feel free to chime in as necessary. It must have been about a month ago that Chevron made their initial bid on Anadarko?
Yeah, it was April 11th, I think, was the original bid for $33 billion. So, yeah, they were the first to come out. But what's kind of funny is this was Occidental's third bid. So what happened is Chevron came out, and then Occidental came back with a bid, I think, a week or so later, with a much higher valuation, and they said, you know, Anadarko, why'd you turn us down twice and then accept a Chevron bid much lower than ours? So that's what kind of kicked off the competition between the two companies.
Yes, and that was interesting because Anadarko was much higher value from Occidental than they were from Chevron, and they still associated some risk around the Occidental shareholders turning that vote or that bid around. And for that reason, they leaned towards Chevron.
Yeah, so originally with the Chevron deal, why they like that one, I believe, is because Chevron shareholders didn't have to vote on it. So Anadarko shareholders still do have to vote on both of the deals. But Chevron's actual shareholders didn't. So when Occidental came in, just because of how their offer was set up, I believe it was 50-50 equity cash, they still need shareholder approval, which I think brought some worry to both Occidental and Anadarko because, you know, the deal was way higher valued than Chevron's deal, so I'm sure some of the shareholders at Occidental weren't pleased that they made the offer.
That's right. And then Warren Buffett stepped in and said he could fund, I believe, $10 billion of that deal. So that, coupled with the restructuring of the offer to 75% cash, 25% equity, was enough to get them across the shareholder, I guess, finish line where they did not need their approval for the bid.
Right, exactly. So I believe if they had less than 20%, it was around 20% equity, they didn't need shareholder approval on the Occidental side. So we watched the private jet fly around, went to Nebraska, and then it went to Paris to get some funding. So it was kind of interesting to watch that happen. And once they came back with the deal, Anadarko actually came out and said, this is a superior deal. And then we learned this week that Chevron actually bowed out of the race. So now it looks like, at this point, unless something happens, it is going to go to Occidental, which was great because we were almost done with the snapshot comparing the two companies. And then, of course, that happens. So we responded around a little bit differently, which we'll go into in this episode on how we spun it. Rather than between Chevron and Occidental, we're looking at what might happen to WES because that's, out of those three companies, the company we cover.
Yeah, and I remember in the first iteration of the snapshot, you guys were looking at like whether Oxy or Chevron had the better synergies, our favorite word, the better, you know, acreage footprint overlap with Anadarko. Do you remember, did you come to any conclusions from that analysis?
Yeah, so actually when we were comparing Chevron to Occidental, Chevron does have rigs on Wes's system in the Delaware, so right away we thought there was more synergies with Chevron. It does turn out Chevron might have acreage dedication with other midstream providers in the basin, so that might have not played into it at all. But it did seem Chevron had better overlap acreage. They both have acreage around the system, and the connectivity in the Delaware is pretty significant. So we believe no matter where their acreage is, they could use Wes's assets to their benefit, either the companies. What I will say is Occidental and Chevron, you know, they're obviously upstream companies and they're massive. I know when Chevron was asked about what they thought about Wes's assets, they actually replied, "We're excited to learn about them." So I don't even think Wes was a big catalyst in either of these deals.
Yeah.
But it is to us because we cover them and anyone that invests in them. So we've been looking into it a little bit more. And one thing we can talk about too is, and what we'll go into with a snapshot is what might happen to Wes, whether they're going to get sold off after the deal, if Occidental's going to keep them, and then we'll go into who we might see buying them in the future.
Yeah, well, that's a good outline for the rest of this conversation too. So, but yeah, let's just walk through that. So let's assume Oxy keeps Wes. What's that like? I mean, are they, they're obviously benefiting somewhat, right? Because of some overlap in the Permian, like you said. But what about Wes's other assets? They have some footprint in the DJ as well, right? So talk to me about that.
So good question, Shireen. I'll start off thinking about the Permian Basin because Wes's assets in the Permian Basin are a major part of their growth story as well as the DJ. We'll get to that next. But Wes has recently expanded their Mentone facility to accommodate more growth in the Permian Basin, and that's really thematic with everything we're seeing in the basin already. So Occidental has every incentive to move rigs onto Wes's system where they don't already have dedicated acreage. And the reason for that is that Wes is an MLP. So a dollar that Wes makes gets translated back to Occidental's share of Wes. So it's a little bit of a double whammy because Occidental's already going to enjoy advantage processing and gathering rates, but then also they're going to get some kickbacks from Wes when they use those assets in the Permian Basin. So when we talk about synergies, that is what we're talking about. Wes's other assets in the DJ Basin do not have any overlap with Occidental, but that's not to say that they're not going to enjoy those same cash flows from Wes's growth in other basins. So the DJ Basin is going to be Wes's secondary most important part of their growth story. And they've already seen, I think, approximately 5% growth throughput quarter over quarter just in the in the DJ Basin.
Yeah, so, I mean, I agree. It really comes down to acreage dedication in the Delaware. Most of their rigs right now are an EPD system, and you know, it makes it seem like how all of them are on there. They might have dedication. That's something we can't see unless one of the companies talks about it. But Ben's right. If they don't have dedication, they have a lot more incentive to move on Wes's system if they own it. So I agree there. There's definitely opportunity for synergies in the Delaware. And then in the DJ, all the Anadarko rigs are obviously committed to Wes's system. I think it makes up about 80% of their throughput. So we don't see Occidental moving any of those rigs off of the system once they become theirs. We assume, you know, our growth projection for the DJ remains the same. We don't see why Oxy would move to any other system. And the only other system, large system in the DJ is DCP, which is a competitor of Wes. So in my view, the DJ is going to stay the same, you know, continue the good growth that we see. It just gets a little bit more dicey in the Delaware with what they're going to do with their rigs.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, I guess the wild card then is, I mean, well, so Oxy's already said that they're going to auction off a couple of Anadarko's assets, right? Like the international ones especially. So the wild card then is, are they going to break up with their new girlfriend or, you know?
Or significant other.
Or, yeah, exactly. Sorry, significant other named Wes. Or are they going to keep it? But, I mean, let's go down that line. Like, what if they're thinking a breakup? Who's the best acquirer? Who should they spin it off to?
I mean, a breakup makes sense. It would make sense because recently Anadarko dropped down almost all their assets to Wes. So I know it's still a parent-child relationship, but if there was a time for them to break off their parent, it's after these drop-downs. Because now, you know, Anadarko has less to drop down, less to give to a midstream MLP, which is usually why the structures were set up in the first place. So I think they could break up, and honestly, West could probably run on its own after a breakup and be okay. I know there's some risk around that, and we've seen West's stock go down a little bit, I think, because of these stocks. But in my opinion, they could probably run on their own as an independent midstream company. But it is nice to have a parent out there. So we have a couple thoughts, and we base these less off of, you know, can the company take the debt out, the finances, and more just the synergies they could have if they were to acquire West. So the two that we pointed out are going to be Energy Transfer and DCP. And so I can go a little into Energy Transfer, and then Ben, if you want to talk about DCP and the overlap in the DJ, we can start there. So what we did first is we used our allocation model, which maps all the gas pipelines across the U.S., and we overlay the two systems in the DJ, or excuse me, in the Delaware for ET.
Pick up your mind.
Yeah. We'll start with D's. It's confusing. But the synergies of the ET West system in the Delaware are pretty, I mean, they overlap significantly. And if you see our snapshot come out, you'll see a map of this. And it shows they're pretty much right on top of each other. ET actually has lines running through the middle of West's system. So why we picked ET is because, you know, these systems are most likely already connected. One of the other big catalysts to this merger and why West might want to do this and why ET might want to do this is West's biggest problem in the Delaware is they're not integrated all the way down to Mount Bellevue for their NGLs. So if ET were to buy them, this would kind of complete their synergies and also allow them to be vertically integrated. Just because currently West delivers its NGLs or part of their NGLs to ET's Lone Star pipeline. So if they were to purchase it, it would be a great synergy because they're already delivering to their pipelines. They also deliver the residue gas to ET's Oasis and Transwestern pipeline. Mm-hmm. So just the synergies between all the connections that are already made with West and ET is what sparked our first idea of, I guess, a good merger.
Mm-hmm.
One catalyst to that, anyone, Ben, can speak up, is ET's been pretty organic with their growth. I don't know if their BD department would reach out and buy a third-party asset like this, but we're looking at strictly contracts in place, who's sending their volumes where, and ET seems like a good partner for Wes.
Personally, I think more from the West end than from the ET end, just because ET is a massive company, right? And you're right, most of their growth has been pretty organic. But what about DCP? A little bit of different story there, it seems, because of the DJ angle, right?
Yeah, a little bit of a different story, but maybe the same theme here. So West's footprint in the DJ is really backed by their Wattenberg processing plant. And the Wattenberg processing plant has seen very healthy growth over the last year, I suppose, about 5% quarter over quarter, as I mentioned earlier. Now, that processing plant already connects to some egress lines owned by DCP out of the DJ. And again, these molecules are making their way from the DJ basin down to Conway. So if DCP is able to control the Wattenberg plant and they already own the Wattenberg egress system, they would, I think there's definitely some interest there or some potential interest, but the first thing that my mind jumps to is that DCP and West together really control the DJ basin. So can they acquire West's gathering system? I don't know.
Yeah, I think it would definitely perk up the regulatory ears on the antitrust laws on that, because you're right. I mean, they control almost all the gathering and processing in Colorado. So not only would you have federal regulations, but state would also come down. And probably, I don't know if it would stop the case, but it would probably push it out and maybe make it look, I don't know, DCP might not want to do it because they already know that going down that road is a lot of legal expenses. And is it worth it just to acquire them? I mean, those two work pretty well together in the basin, it seems like, already. So that's where it's kind of gray on the DJ side, is the regulatory and just what that would impact the total merger. So, I don't know. It's hard to say. And I'm no lawyer, but I feel like that would cause some issues.
Yeah, it sounds like pros and cons on both sides, but definitely a story worth watching from the West perspective, and one that you're not really hearing much about in the media. So thanks, guys. I appreciate the insight. It was very helpful to get a better grasp on what's going on with Wes. As always, if you guys have any questions about this week's episode, shoot us a message at insight@eastdaily.com. While you're at it, feel free to share some feedback, send us your oil and gas questions. We'll have a monthly mailback episode coming up in a couple weeks, so we can answer your questions then. Please do remember that anything you hear on this podcast is not intended to be investment advice, so please do not invest based solely on what you hear on this episode. That's all for now, folks. We'll see you next time.